This is the State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. A year and a half ago, the Pillowtex company shut down and left more than 4,000 North Carolina workers out of their jobs. It was the biggest one-day job loss in North Carolina history. Those manufacturing jobs would not be coming back to the Piedmont region of the state. So attention turned to retraining employees for other lines of work. Enter the community colleges. When you hear officials and politicians talk about retraining workers, chances are they mean sending those laid-off employees to a community college. North Carolina has 58 of them. When the system was founded in the state four decades ago, the aim was to train workers. And whether it still lives up to that goal depends on how you're defining train. And that's what we're talking about this hour on the State of Things. Are North Carolina's community colleges giving workers the training they need? Are the jobs there for them when they complete their retraining? And are the community colleges evolving? Some are seeing more students just out of high school attending community colleges, where they can get college credits under their belt before transferring to bigger schools. And the other question, is the money there? Politicians talk about investing in community colleges. Are they coming through with the money? If you want to join our conversation, the number's 1-877-962-9862. With us are Scott Rawls, who is president of Craven Community College. He's also the former vice president of economic and workforce development at the North Carolina Community College System, and he's in the studios of Public Radio East in New Bern on the Craven Community College campus. Welcome, Scott Rawls.
Thank you, Melinda. Glad to be here.
And George Vaughn joins us. He is Professor Emeritus of Adult and Community College Education at North Carolina State University and the editor of the Community College Review. Welcome, George Vaughn.
Thank you.
Hi. Well, let's start out with just some facts about the community college system. Scott Rawls, who is attending community college in North Carolina?
Well, if you look across the state, one out of every six people, I believe, attend a community college for some purpose. If you're on our campus, you look at our students, our average age here at Craven Community College is 30 years of age. That's the norm across the state. And so it's people from all walks of life and at multiple ages. Many, and certainly female minority, are probably overrepresented in terms of the total population because we provide a lot of opportunities that other education does not provide. And so it's the fabric of North Carolina.
What kind of opportunities are you providing there and community colleges in general that folks would not be getting elsewhere?
Well, we provide the most comprehensive system in the nation. So we provide from basic skills, literacy, English as a second language, college transfer. About a third of our students here are planning to transfer to a four-year college. Our training programs, our technical programs, also our customized training that we do for workforce, business, and industry. For instance, we trained about 600 people last year for new jobs at one of our local industries. So those are the types of things, and the breadth is extends all across the economy.
Mm-hmm. What was the industry? What were those 600 jobs?
Well, we're very fortunate in New Bern. BSH, which is a joint venture between Bosch and Siemens, has created their North American Appliance Park here in New Bern. And so they're adding about 1,200 jobs. Mm-hmm. And so we're training people for those specific jobs.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about those efforts in a moment. But I want to talk also about the other thing that community colleges do, and that is retraining workers who may have been laid off. And there were many cases of that in the western part of the state after Pillowtex shut down, the textile maker shut down last year. George Vaughn, do you think that the community colleges are meeting that goal, that mission of training workers, and in this case, retraining workers?
I certainly think they're doing a great job. I don't know whether we can ever meet the total needs of when we have massive shutdowns such as they had in western North Carolina. And it's also very intimidating to people who have been out of school for 20, 30 years to come back to college. So it's a very difficult situation, but I think our community colleges are doing a tremendous job meeting those needs.
Mm-hmm. So the outreach is there. They're saying, okay, you've been laid off from your mill job, but I guess they got maybe about 29% of the people to take them up on the offer to go for retraining in some of those places.
And that's probably pretty good, in my opinion, because it's very intimidating to return to college, but to go to college if you've never been there before and you haven't practiced any writing or mathematics for a number of years and so forth. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an overwhelming challenge, which the North Carolina community colleges are absolutely doing their best to meet.
Mm-hmm. How is all that funded, Scott Rawls? Because it sounds like we're talking about a great variety of what's being offered at community colleges, but who's paying this bill?
The majority of the funding comes from the state. Most of our funding for programs, for equipment, for our staff is from the state. The county pays for our buildings, and then we receive some money that's federal, but a very small percentage of our funding is federal. Most of the federal funding that comes to the state for training goes to actually pay for the expenses for people to pay tuition to come to a community college or to participate in a training program.
Mm-hmm. I read someplace, though, that the way it's set up with paying for those students, you don't get the money for somebody who may have enrolled this year in the fall of 2004. You're not getting money for them until next year.
Well, the way it works, our budget is based on our previous year enrollment. So, for instance, our college last year grew 11.5%. That means our budget this year is 11.5% greater than it was last year. This year, our fall enrollment is about 3% higher than it was last year. So we're always a year behind in terms of our enrollment growth.
Mm-hmm. What's the biggest challenge that community colleges face? George Vaughn?
I think the greatest challenge is serving all segments of society. And to make sure that we don't leave certain segments behind. For example, there are a number of segments of our population who need the community college, and with the enrollment crunch at most community colleges, they're not going to get in unless some things are done. For example, to use your example, once someone is squeezed out, as a terminology I like to use, it could well be that laid-off mill worker who has no job and little education. Or it could have been a recent high school graduate whose single-parent mother fights constantly to keep her family together and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I see the greatest challenge as keeping open access functioning in a way that it serves all segments of society and not just the first-come, first-served.
Mm. So do you have enough teachers then, Scott Rawls, to meet that need? If there were that situation where it's first come, first serve, where everybody gets in.
Well, we'll never have enough to serve every need. There's no doubt about that. And we struggle with that. We also struggle because our teachers are underpaid. We ranked 47th last year in salaries, and that's a major struggle for us. Equipment funding. Just to give you an example, our college is an average college. Our total equipment funding last year was a little less than $300,000. That supports two campuses. We have an aviation program, a strong manufacturing program. That's for every bit of equipment that we'll buy in terms of our allocation. So, no, there's not, but we always try to do the best we can. We never try to turn anyone away, but we do have classes that fill. We have programs that fill. We have people who have to go longer than they anticipate because they can't take the class when they need the class. So that's something that we always struggle.
How would you say the budget for community colleges compares to the 16-campus state university system?
All right, Scott, I want to hear that.
That's a tough question. I mean, certainly we feel like that sometimes we get overlooked. I would say this year that this is the best budget we've had in 25 years. So we feel appreciative for what we received this year, but we could always use more. I know that there's a lot that we can do in supporting the economy and training people that we're not able to do because of our funding level right now. And it's a struggle. And I think the state representatives have stepped up this year to help us in that regard. And so we're appreciative for what we've received, but we certainly would like more.
Yeah, I understand that in the state budget this year, you got more money for what you called the equipment funding, the things on campus, the buildings and such. But did you get any more to bring the professors' salaries up? I understand they're 47th in the nation for the full-time community college faculty.
Yes, we did. This year, the funding was about 2% over and above the 2.5% that was provided to state employees. So that trying to get us to a point, and they also tried to raise the level in terms of minimums, providing us for those where we weren't meeting 80% of the national average, provided us some additional funding to bring very low paid faculty up to a minimum point. So we made some good progress, best progress we've made in a long time, but we have a long way to go.
Just some numbers to put out here. I think that the university's full professors make over $105,000 a year in the university system, but at the community college full-time faculty is at about $37,000, $38,000, maybe a little more with that pay raise.
That's correct. And, you know, one of the things that's kind of ironic for me, it's difficult, but sometimes I dread making job offers because I know how low I'm going to offer the salary. And so sometimes you get that comment, you've got to be kidding. And you don't look forward to that.
Yeah. George Vaughn, you've had your foot in both of these arenas. You're a professor emeritus at NC State, but also editor of the Community College Review. What do you think of the funding that goes to community colleges versus that to the university system?
Oh, by the way, I was a president for 17 years also, so I've been in practically all sides of the game. I think it's absolutely wrong. I mean, to put it quite bluntly, and I've been very fortunate to be on the professor's side of the fence since I've been in North Carolina, so I've enjoyed my good salary. But on the other hand, I do not think that it's a fair practice to pay professors at research universities 3 to 4 times as much as you pay them at community colleges.
Okay. You're listening to The State of Things, and today we're talking about community colleges in North Carolina. With us is George Vaughn, Professor Emeritus at NC State and editor of the Community College Review. Scott Rawls is with us. He's president of Craven Community College. And we are taking your calls. The number's 1-877-962-9862. Can community colleges in North Carolina serve the needs of their constituents? Should they be funded differently? Are they being neglected? Give us a call, 1-877-962-9862. Coming up, combining community college and high school and teaching in a community college. All that ahead on The State of Things. Support for The State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners who support WUNC. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava, and we're talking today about community colleges in North Carolina. We're taking your calls. What do community colleges add to your community? Are they meeting their mission of training workers, or what exactly is the definition of training workers? Our number is 1-877-962-9862. We'll get back to our conversation with Scott Rawls at Craven Community College and George Vaughn, editor of the Community College Review, in a moment. But first, we want to talk with WUNC reporter Laura Leslie about a new program that Governor Easley announced last week. It allows some high school students to take courses at community colleges and graduate from a 5-year high school program with an associate's degree. Laura Leslie's with us to talk about the Learn and Earn project. Hi there, Laura.
Hi, Melinda. Hi.
What's behind this program? What's the motivation for Learn and Earn?
Well, according to Governor Easley, there were 3 goals for the program. One of them was to reduce the very high dropout rate. North Carolina high schools have a dropout rate of about 40% between 9th grade and graduation. And the governor thinks that's in part it's due to the fact that, you know, students know that a high school diploma, frankly, doesn't get you very far anymore. So the program is saying, you know, give us one more year and we'll get you a degree that you can actually use to get a good job. The second goal is college attendance. This is being aimed primarily at students who are economically disadvantaged, students who are at high risk for dropping out or who are the first in their families to go to college. And so for those students, this is a head start into advanced education. The state is basically paying for an associate degree, or they can take those credits and put them into a 4-year program. And it's fast track, so they're into the workforce even faster.
Mm-hmm. So this program's already been in place in some high school campuses in the state. How practically does it work? Are these high school students who are physically going to a community college for their classes?
Yeah, these new schools are being set up for the most part on the campus at community and 4-year college campuses. For example, in Durham, Josephine Dobbs Clement High School is one of the first, and that's on the campus at NC Central University. So the students are attending their classes, even the high school ones, on the campus at the college, and then they will go from this year their high school courses. Next year they'll be in the college courses at the same campus.
Mm. How many kids are they anticipating will take this up?
Well, Clement High School, for example, has a capacity, I think, of 400. It's got 85 students enrolled now. Of course, there'll be more coming in as younger students learn about this and are sort of tracked into this as they're going through middle school by guidance counselors.
Tracking is the operative verb there. When do students decide or that this is something they want to do? When do they have to make a decision that this is the track they want to take? At what point in their high school career?
Well, I think the school administrators are really hoping, again, to sort of, you know, sort of start steering them this way in middle school if they're the sort of student that this is, you know, really designed to help. But the students actually have to apply for the program. They have to, you know, do the application, an essay, get recommendations from, you know, people inside and outside of the school. So, you know, they can get tracked into this, but they still have to actually take action and get themselves into the program. Hmm.
Are these necessarily going to be the kind of students, the students that this would help, would they have that incentive to want to look ahead, you know, that many years? We're talking not looking ahead to, you know, the next month, but to when they're 19 years old. And we're asking them to do this when there might be 14 or so, 13 or 14?
That's a really good question. You could ask that about a lot of, you know, high school and middle school guidance, I guess. But, you know, what the governor's point is here, and I think it's a really valid one, is that students know, even at that age, that a high school diploma is not going to get you a very good job. And so they're saying, you know, give us one more year and we'll get you something that you can get a good job with.
Mm-hmm. And how is this program going to be funded?
Well, the state is actually paying for it because the students are, they're still state students and the state would still be paying for them to go to high school. They're just applying that money differently. So it's about $2.2 million this year. The students are treated, like any other high school students. There's no tuition for the classes. There's no fees. And some of the programs, even the books are paid for.
Huh. Okay. Well, Laura Leslie, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Laura Leslie is WUNC's Capitol reporter. She's been talking to us about the Learn and Earn program that Governor Easley announced last week. It'll be happening on 5 campuses next year and then expand this year and then expanding to 10 more community college campuses in the year after that. If you want to join our conversation, our number is 1-877-962-9862. That's 1-877-962-9862. Go to Nag's Head out on the Outer Banks. Caroline's with us. Greetings, Caroline.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, did you attend community college?
Yes, I actually go to College of the Albemarle in Manio and in Elizabeth City, and I enjoy it, and everyone there has been very helpful and informative, and the professors are great. However, I did go to Cape Fear Community College in Wilmington, North Carolina, and I had the most wonderful advisors and professors. I know no one is in your studio from Cape Fear, but the general consensus of all students in my class that I spoke with and roommates, and the reason that I don't go there anymore is because the administration habitually ignores students' needs. And I know that they're underfunded and understaffed and all of that, but computer systems were antiquated. You know, I was told I wasn't a priority by someone in the administrative office. And my advisor was just horrified because every student is a priority. And I just really feel like that's a really good area for people to go to community college, and there's a lot going on in Wilmington, but I really think the school is missing out on what students need and just their general attitude towards the students.
So do you move to the College of the Albemarle?
Yes, I am going to College of the Albemarle, and nothing even remotely weird or unhappy has happened there, and everyone is, they really want you to get your education and find out what you want to do, and they aren't just pushing you through. And that's how I felt at Cape Fear, that you were just a number, you were just really being pushed through. And I had gone to East Carolina before that, and I never felt that way at ECU either. Mm. And I just really had a terrible experience.
I'd like to put this to our guests, George Vaughn and Scott Rawls, that neither of them represent Cape Fear, and nobody from Cape Fear, as you said, is here on the program. But I have read that was a community college that was seeing enormous enrollment boost, and a lot of them being recent high school graduates who were deciding they were going to get their first year or two of college knocked out at the community college because it was much cheaper, and then moving on. So there were great strains in terms of a lot more students there. Is that not the case, Scott Rawls?
Well, one of the things that colleges experienced is that until this year, while we were receiving funds for enrollment growth, we were also being cut in our infrastructure. We were receiving cuts in technology. We were receiving cuts in student services, administrative support. So while the expansion supported growth in terms of being able to provide classes, it cut in other areas. And so certainly for a fast-growing community college like Cape Fear, I'm sure it's a great struggle to be able to handle that enrollment growth while you're simultaneously losing an infrastructure. This year, this budget fully funded our enrollment growth, but we didn't receive the same types of cuts to our infrastructure that we had over the previous 2 years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. George Vaughn?
Well, I don't know Cape Fear that well, but I would bet you that many, many students have had the wonderful experience there that the individual has had at College of Albemarle, so I just would be hesitant to judge on, one person's experience.
All right, let's go to Roger in Dare County. Greetings, Roger.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I teach at College of the Albemarle.
Okay.
So thank you, Carolyn.
That wasn't a plant, was it?
Okay. No.
Okay.
I wanted to say two comments. One is, I was in a corporate position where I was paid over $60,000 a year, and I quit that to come to college to teach for $28,000 a year, and I'm thrilled because the corporate environment was just way too stressful. It wasn't worth the money I was being paid, and this is a joy, even at $28,000.
What are you teaching?
Psychology. I teach both online and face-to-face, and I actually, the other side of that of my comments is that I teach 20 high school students in my class, along with six college students in that one class, or 26 students in that class.
So, now, is that part of that, because just a moment ago we were talking about this Learn and Earn program
that's a new concept. The Huskins bill requires that the colleges provide training to the high school students if the high school students meet certain criteria, and so we have given the high schools that option, and they've taken it and run with it because it's free for the high school students. They don't have to pay a cent, and the high school gets FTE money, and the college gets FTE money, so both sides get money for it.
What, I'm sorry, tell me what that acronym is.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not exactly sure what FTE stands for, but it's money that comes from the government to pay for every full-time student is a certain amount of money that is given to the colleges. That's how we make our money.
Now tell
FTE.
Me, yeah, a moment ago we were talking about Learn and Earn, and the effort, the impetus there from the state was if you get these high school kids on track so that they are taking classes in the community college, they will be less likely to drop out. I'm curious about what kind of kids you're seeing, the high school kids, the 20 of them or so from Dare County who are taking the classes at College of the Albemarle. Are these kids that are trying to get some college credit under their belt before they move on to, say, get their high school degree and then go to a four-year university? Or are they taking classes that might help them in the workplace because they plan to go to work right away after high school?
Most of them want to go on to a four-year institution. Many of them want to finish their 2 years at the community college system and then finish the other 2 years at the four-year institution. And so they're taking advantage of the availability of the classes now, if they're good students, if they pass certain criteria.
Okay. Well, Roger, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. 1-877-962-9862 is the number if you want to join our conversation. We're talking about the community colleges in North Carolina. There are 58 of them, and we're talking about the funding for those community colleges and the experience going on there. The number again, 1-877-962-9862. Joining us right now is Valerie Jones. She teaches at a community college as well. She's chair of the Arts and Sciences Department at Pamlico Community College. It's in Grantsboro, and she's on the phone now. Welcome, Valerie.
Melinda.
Hi there. Well, some of the courses you teach are English, women's studies, cultural studies, and those seem far away from what we might describe as strictly job training.
Absolutely. They are under the umbrella of general education, and especially the English courses are required of students regardless of their program. Almost every program that a student enrolls in, be it terminal or a degree program, is going to have the 2 semesters of English required.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of students sign up there? Is it everybody who comes through Pamlico Community College ends up in an English class there?
They all have that privilege, yes.
Okay.
Almost every student that enrolls at the college is required to take the English class. And so myself and the other English instructor see and get to know almost every student that's on this campus.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the students that go there. What could you describe them as a group?
Absolutely. And rather than being one homogenous group, there's a couple different types that you would be able to kind of categorize. There are the students, and we also have the Huskins program, and there are the students either who are working on completing their high school diploma or who are recent high school graduates who are using this as an easing into the university system, either for financial reasons, because they have commitments to their family, because they come from a small rural area, and they're making the next step into going away to a university, which is a big move for them culturally. We also have a number of students that are returning students that have been working for the last 20, 30, and 40 years, and for a variety of reasons have chosen to undertake the huge hurdle, which I very much give them accolades for, of returning to school and altering their career path and doing something different. Some of them because of jobs that have been lost due to closings and the changing economy, and others because as their children come up to school and their children prepare for high school and college, they realize that they want to be able to do what their children now have the opportunity to do as well.
Right. Now, Pamlico Community College, I understand, is the smallest community college in the state. And I'm wondering, from your perspective, you used to teach at a four-year university at East Carolina, and then you went to the smallest community college in the state. Why'd you do that? What went into that decision?
Well, I actually, Pamlico is the fifth community college that I've taught at. I also taught at Edgecombe and Tarboro and in Rocky Mount. I've taught at Craven, and I taught at Lenore as well. And one of the draws for me to make the shift from the university system to the community college system is the student body. And characteristic of our students at community colleges across the state, within my experience, has been they're not so indoctrinated into the learning process that they have shut down their thinking and their creativity and their enthusiasm. And a lot of times that creates problems for them within education, with a very unspoken but very specific set of expectations for what is academic or appropriate answering and participation in class. And so their enthusiasm often in a standard higher education or in a university classroom would get them marked as difficult students. In the community college setting, there's more of an awareness that these students come from very diverse backgrounds. To make it to 40 years old without a high school diploma or with only a high school diploma, they have had to be very strong people. And the community college gives us the opportunity to recognize that strength and give them the skills to excel in the academic realm.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and then the added perk to being at the smallest community college is really the ability to do the individualized attention within that.
Yeah. Of course, one concern for university professors is publish or perish. And there's been many a talk show about whether university professors do more research than actual teaching in the classroom with teaching assistants. A teaching assistant is not a perk that goes in the community college system. So are you still able to do research on the side, or is your main mission there to teach all the time?
My main mission is to teach, and having said that, I was also the only community college presenter at the last two conferences that I went to last year, which says a couple of things to me. One, that there is the flexibility and the time to be able to do research. It's not a requirement, so there's not the impetus for a lot of folks, but there is the opportunity still. And second, that there's the fact that I was the only one. I think at one of the conferences there was someone from the Texas Community College system, but that also tells me there's some very distinct difference in the expectations for those instructors outside of the classroom. And I haven't yet been able to resolve exactly my feelings on that difference, but it is definitely something I've noticed.
Yeah. And finally, before we go, we were just talking a moment ago about the governor's Learn and Earn program,
right,
which would put more high school students in community colleges, at least in some selected places in the state. What do you think of that?
A couple things. One, with the dual enrollment in the Huskins program that already exists, that very much has been taken advantage of by students who are already pursuing four-year degrees. And I think that's excellent. And this type of program would help those students, and recognizing that those students are already receiving help in a lot of ways. as far as being a solution to the dropout rate, I don't see that as being viable, because there's something in the educational system that's much more integral than a relatively quick fix, that they don't, there's not that recognition of the value of a high school diploma. So to assume that they would then value an associate's diploma through the same type of curriculum that they're in doesn't fit together for me. And I'm extremely concerned about the tracking, that what that has shown historically is that the students that are already marginalized due to race, due to class, due to area or location, are going to continue to be boxed even earlier on as what you really need is to go to this program, and they're never given the opportunity. You can get a four-year degree. You can get a master's. That those dreams of reality never can come to fruition if at middle school we already say, you would make a really good factory worker.
Right. Valerie Jones, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Valerie Jones is chair of the Arts and Sciences Department at Pamlico Community College in Grantsboro. We are talking about community colleges this hour. If you want to join us, our number is 1-877-962-9862. Scott Rawls is with us. He's president of Craven Community College, and George Vaughn is editor of the Community College Review. Scott Rawls, what do you think of Learn and Earn,
the governor's program? I think it's the next evolution of some of the things we're doing right now. As was mentioned, we have many high school students on our campus every day. Many of our machining students, many of our automotive students are high school students who come here for that training. We provide college-level classes at all three of our high schools. What the Learn and Earn program allows us to do is create small high schools on our campuses, actual cohorts of students that will come here for a high school experience. Sometimes those high schools may be focused around a science, a technology, another type of area like that. Sometimes they are providing an opportunity for a student that's not going to thrive at, for instance, New Bern High School has 1,600 students. Rather than a student drop out because of a social issue or some, they may prefer this environment. So I think it provides a next evolution.
Okay, we are talking about the North Carolina Community Colleges today with Scott Rawls, president of Craven Community College, and George Vaughn, Professor Emeritus in Adult and Community College Education from NC State. Just ahead, we'll get to more of your calls. 1-877-962-9862 is the number on the state of things. This is the State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkova. North Carolina Community Colleges is the topic today on the program on the State of Things. With us, Scott Rawls, who's president of Craven Community College, and George Vaughn, editor of the Community College Review. We have Mary, who's on the line with us now from Raleigh. Greetings, Mary. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me on. Uh-huh. I have a slightly different perspective maybe from some of the people who've called in. I have graduate and undergraduate degrees that I got from liberal arts universities back in the 1970s and spent 25 years working in things kind of related to those, my fields. Decided in the past couple of years to do a career change, and I'm doing that through the community college system. I'm going to Wake Tech, substance abuse counseling program, and I sort of am chagrined to admit that I'm surprised by the quality of the education I'm getting there, because I was a little bit skeptical about it.
Well, what were you thinking? A snob? What were you thinking you were going to get?
Well, I don't know exactly. I was just going to try it out and see what happened. And so far, it's just been a very rewarding experience. My instructors have been excellent. And one of the things about them all is that they have some very practical experience in the fields that they are teaching. They've been out doing it. Which is a little bit different from a PhD theoretical sort of approach to class that I got undergraduate and graduate.
So how long do you have to go to get your, is your certificate, your degree?
I do it full-time, it's 2 years. I get the advantage of getting credit for a lot of the classes I took before, which some people may not know. You know, you can get a lot of credits for things, the basic stuff like math and English, science. I don't have to retake those classes, so I can really focus on the classes in my major field, which has just been, that's just been delightful for me. The diversity of the student population is another thing that's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. A lot of different people, a lot of different ages, a lot of different backgrounds. I've really enjoyed that.
Well, I'd like to put that to our guests, what your comment about being chagrined to admit what you thought you might get and being pleasantly surprised by what you got. Scott Rawls, do you run into that mindset that, okay, well, somebody's going to the community college, maybe they're not going to get as good an education as they would at a four-year school?
A lot of times we're underestimated, and I think generally we surprise people in a positive way. One thing that the caller mentioned is a growing trend that we see is reverse transfer. Students who already have a four-year degree that come to us, many of our nursing students, some of our information technology students, already have four-year degrees. They come to us to get that two-year degree, but to take those skills training courses to complement their four-year degree. So that's a growing trend for us and for most colleges around the state.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Mary, and good luck with the program there. 1-877-962-9862 is our number, and Jason is in Durham. Hi there, Jason.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd just like to start off by saying I agree with Mary that the community colleges have a hidden talent among their instructors. It's fantastic what we get there.
Yeah.
You still there?
Yes, well, we sure are. We sure
okay.
are.
But putting junior or putting high school students in college classes is a big mistake. We took a class for fun this summer, and we had 9 high school students there. They were disruptive, disrespectful, and when we went and approached the administration about it, we were told that the Huskin bill gives them 10 times the FTE money for a high school student than they did for a senior student or an adult student, and their prerogative was to keep the high school students in the class regardless.
Yeah. Well, George Vaughn, can you respond to that, or Scott Rawls?
I can respond. We receive the same money regardless of whether the student's a high school student or already a high school graduate. I think that what we're trying to provide is an adult environment, a college environment. We require here people have to be willing, whether high school students or not, to function in that college environment. So I think it depends on the actual class, the instructor, and the college in terms of that. In terms of the whether disruptive or not.
But I guess if somebody is, as Jason is saying, you know, bringing more money to the college, you know, is there a disincentive to take care of that? Or?
Well, the high school students, in terms of our funding, a high school student is a student just as another student. It's not a difference in terms of funding. We are seeing a growing movement towards providing more to high school students, and we're doing more of that as most colleges are doing as well.
Mm-hmm. Jason?
Melinda, this is George Vaughn.
George Vaughn?
If I may comment on that. I think the real danger is certainly not high school students being disruptive. I see that as a minor problem, and any instructor should be able to handle that. But your earlier commentator, the department chair or division chair?
Yes, at Pamlico.
I think she pointed out a very real danger in that you are tempted, at least, to track students into various tracks if they decide as sophomores in high school that they want to do this or that. And the danger is, your psychology instructor pointed out that the students he had all had planned to go to a four-year degree. Or they wanted to use the community college to get the first 2 years of a four-year degree and transfer. So you got the very ambitious, bright students who are getting into the transfer program. And the real danger is the other side of the coin, where you track those who are not going to transfer, or at least they don't think there are sophomores in high school, that you track them into the dead-end, low-paying occupational technical programs. And this is what many of us fear might happen. And indeed, the community college has been accused of this for a number of years, but no one has ever been able to document to my satisfaction that this has taken place.
Is it possible, though? I wonder, though, if it's possible, George, with the proponents of the Learn and Earn program would say they're targeting potential dropouts, that it might be good to at least keep those students, even if it is tracking towards some kind of vocational program, after they get a year of their community college, they get the two-year degree, they would at least not be a high school dropout.
Absolutely.
And they could proceed from with the associate's degree maybe to something right. else other than the job you're describing.
They're much, much better off with that than with than dropping out. But, again, the real danger is that you find too many from the lower socioeconomic groups, too many minorities, too many who have not been able to tap into the mainstream, being tracked into the dead-end positions. And as you know, the bachelor's degree remains a stepping stone to all professions and to most positions of leadership. So if you get too many in the occupational technical from these groups, then you're literally closing the door.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll go to Rachel in Durham. Hi there, Rachel.
Hi.
Welcome to the program. Did you have a question or comment for us?
I had a comment. Sure. I am a nursing student at Piedmont Community College in Roxborough, and I live in Durham and drive an hour each way back and forth to school every day. I chose to attend school in Roxborough because there are very long wait lists for nursing programs at all of the other community colleges in this area. Sometimes the wait lists are 2 and 3 years long. And I'd like to hear if there are plans to increase funding for specific training and degree programs that have a very high demand in North Carolina, such as nursing.
Yeah, it would seem so, because we hear those other stories about how there's such a shortage of nurses. Scott Rawls?
Well, we just expanded our nursing program by 40%. In terms of doing that, we also go through the Board of Nursing in North Carolina, and so we're allocated certain numbers of slots. And clearly, the demand in terms of the jobs and the demand in terms of students outweigh our capability of or our number of slots in terms of that. So it's a challenge. There are efforts right now to provide additional funds to help us to get training for master's levels nursing. Recruiting nursing instructors can be a challenge. So there are challenges in that regard. We try to respond as our college did last year.
Okay. Rachel, thank you for your call. Theris is in Pine Tops. Hi there, Theris.
Hi. My question is, considering dual enrollment of high school students in the college,
mm-hmm.
I haven't been going to college for 3 years now, and I'm three classes away from getting my associate's degree. One of the classes I need is English 114, and the problem is, every time I try to register for it, I have even registered early, the second day of early registration, and it was already full with nothing but high school students. And it seems to me they're cutting out the older generation that needs the schooling in order to get new jobs, the ones that have been laid off and have lost their jobs because of the economy.
Well, you know, I'd like to put your question to George Vaughn just before we go. Thank you for your call, because George Vaughn, you mentioned this earlier about the first come, first serve versus open, so that everybody can take the class.
I see this. Again, it's a major challenge facing the community guys today. How do you serve all segments of society, not serve just those who get there first, who know how to negotiate the system? And this is a perfect example of that. If you continue to enroll high school students, you only have so many seats. Who's squeezed out?
Mm-hmm.
The older worker, the unemployed, the new immigrant, on and on and on.
Scott Rawls, do you have any solution to that?
Well, the caller makes a good point, and that's that we never turn anyone away from the college, but you may not be able to take the class you want when you need it or in time to complete your degree. There are ways in which, for instance, here at our college, those who are returning students get the first opportunity in registering. So there are ways in which you can try to provide advantages in that regard, but that is certainly a challenge, and that is where you'll see the lack of space and the lack of instructors hurting a student in that regard.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for your call, and good luck, Theris. And thanks to our guests, Scott Rawls and George Vaughn. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. George Vaughn is Professor Emeritus of Adult and Community College Education at NC State, and Scott Rawls is President of Craven Community College in New Bern. He came to us from the studios of Public Radio East. Recently, writer Sarah Dessen got her first new car. This had everything she ever wanted, the plush seats, the power, everything, that distinct smell that all of her used cars, no matter how pristine their condition, had lost long before she bought them. This new car also had a navigation system. At first, Sarah was hesitant to include that option, but she eventually came around.
A navigation system is not a necessity, like windshield wipers or airbags or air conditioning, which is a must if you live in North Carolina. I don't care what anyone says. After a demonstration, though, I started to consider it. The truth is, I've always been navigationally challenged, and I don't just get lost, I get frustrated. One of my first jobs after high school was driving a delivery van for a cellular phone company, a bad career choice for someone whose first impulse, when they find themselves completely lost, is to pull over and cry. Over the years, I've gotten a bit better at finding my way around, although it does help that I've lived in the same town my entire life. There are only so many ways to get lost on the way to Whole Foods. Still, for longer trips, the idea of guidance built right into the dashboard appealed. I had high expectations, and as I pulled out of the dealer's lot and plugged in my home address, it did not disappoint. An illuminated map popped up on the display, and there I was, a little red arrow moving west. Perfect. Plus, there was even a voice to guide me. Take the next left turn, it said. Never pushy, just helpful. In 2 miles, make a slight left turn. The voice was female, verging on British, and very soothing and calm. What I always wished my inner voice, which is prone to shrieking and pathological indecision, sounded like. Driving home, I thought, wouldn't it be great if there were navigation systems for everything? I am a terrible decision maker. I freeze up in the soup aisle, torn between tomato rice and tomato noodle. It's pathetic. But with my very own all-purpose personal navigation system, everything would be different. Ideally, it could handle the little things, like what should I cook for dinner, as well as the big, like how in the world am I going to write another book? No more anxiety, nibbling of fingernails, and free-floating stress. Instead, I'd wait, and a second later the voice would tell me exactly what to do, as sure of its convictions as I was unsure of my own. It would solve all my problems. I'd never make a bad move or do something I later regretted again. Then, though, the voice in the car piped up. Take the next exit on your right, she said, and as I glanced ahead, I realized that actually this was not the way I usually went at all. It would have gotten me home eventually, but also taken me about 7 miles out of my way. I was sure the system was just messed up and would realize its mistake, but as I kept driving, the voice was insistent. Take the next exit, she told me, and then, a second later, when I didn't, if possible, make a U-turn. By this point, buyer's remorse was setting in. What did I need a directional system for if it didn't show me the best way? I could find the indirect, lucky-if-you-get-there way on my own. I needed precision, exactitude. Just then, something extraordinary happened. The map on the screen adjusted itself, with the word recalculating and large green letters flashing beneath it. A second or so later, it was showing a new route, the one I'd meant to follow all along, and we were back on track. The voice prompted me again, and I noted that she didn't sound flustered, or mad, or near tears. Instead, she accepted the new and better situation. She was just as confident that, even with the change, we'd get there eventually. The rest of the way, I couldn't help but think that maybe my car's navigational system wasn't so different from the internal one I'd been using all along. Nothing can make life entirely simpler. It's meant to be complicated, so you know you're really living it. Navigational system or not, it was the same process. You chart a course, make a choice, and follow it. What really matters is that you remember that if you get lost or miss a turn, you can always find another way. Recalculate, as my new car would say, and try again.
Sarah Dessen's most recent book is called The Truth About Forever. She lives in Chapel Hill.